Avos Perk Aleph Mishnah Ches 1:8, and now we meet Yehuda ben Tabe and Shimon ben Shetach, the third of the five sets of Zugos. These men lived in really turbulent times, largely under the time of Alexander Yanai, that's the Yanai HaMelech, perhaps the worst, definitely the worst of the Hasmonean kings, who basically forced, in this case, Yehuda ben Tabe to flee. Go to Alexandria and in Egypt and live there because Alexander Yanai was killing the Prussian. And when he died when Alexander Yanai died in 76 BCE, so then his wife, Shlomtzion HaMalka, took over, and she was the sister of Shimon ben Shetach, the other of these two. And basically she ruled for 9 years or so and empowered the Prussian to come back and a number of great things. I'll talk more about that in the next Mishnah. But here we have Yehuda ben Tabe. It's a machlokas in the Gemara and Chagiga if Yehuda ben Tabe was the Nasi and Shimon ben Shetach was the Av Beis Din, or vice versa. Here our Mishnah, of course, rules that Yehuda ben Tabe is the Nasi. And here he is speaking to Dayanim, to people presiding over a court, a judge in a Jewish Beis Din. So therefore probably has limited application to us. He says, Yehuda ben Tabe v'Shimon ben Shetach kibul mehem. Yehuda ben Tabe Omer, Yehuda ben Tabe said, Al ta'as atzmacha ka'orche hadayanin. So the Gerus, the version of the text in front of us, says orche hadayanin. Like the word orech is like shulchan orech you have in the Pesach Seder, the set table. So orche hadayanin are the people who arrange for arrange for people to present their cases. So in modern Hebrew, an orech din is a lawyer, because that's what he's doing, right? He's essentially helping his client to be victorious in the case. We did not have lawyers in the time in Beis Din in general, and therefore that's not what the meaning would be here. Actually, it would mean essentially if you're functioning as a judge, you shouldn't essentially lead the witnesses or lead the litigants to help them present their best case. That's not how it works in the Torah system. It's not adversarial. There's essentially a Beis Din of what's called three, who are asking all the questions and trying to get to the bottom of the matter, get the facts from both litigants as well as any witnesses, and then rule accordingly. So he's saying, don't help either side to present their case that looks illegitimate, looks bad, and people will learn to, you know, be dishonest. It goes without saying, he's not talking about teaching people how to lie to win their case. That, of course, would be forbidden. And this Mishnah here is telling you, sort of giving you, I'll call it good advice, that even within the bounds of legitimacy, you shouldn't, as a judge, help one side to present his case, even if he really should be winning, to win. That's not right. That's not what a judge should do. Now, there is another approach based on a different gears, a different reading of the words of the Mishnah here. It wouldn't be orche, as in like people who arrange, but rather arche, like as in the word arkaos, like a Gentile courts, related to the word like the arch and the prefix in English, like an archduke or an archangel or an archetype. That A-R-C-H means like the chief, main, ruling, most important. And so they're living, Yehuda ben Tabe and Shimon Shetach are living in a time where the Jewish world is being run by essentially Jews in name, like Yanai HaMelech, but who are actually totally Hellenized. I think it'd be very safe to say that Yanai Melech had a lot more in common, would see more eye to eye with Antiochus than with his great grandfather Shimon and great uncle Yehuda Maccabee. So the advice here is that they were Hellenizing and turning the country into essentially a Greek state with its own Greco-Roman legal system, if you will. So we are advising against that, and to not function like the Arche Hadanim, like the Gentile courts, the Gentile judges, who essentially do things not in the Jewish way. Specifically, Bartuna brings two pshatim here. One is it's talking to a judge in specific and saying, listen, there are ways in which a judge could preside alone over a case, as opposed to as a Beis Din of three, but you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do like how the Gentiles do. You should have a tribunal of three as a Beis Din. There's another Pshat that Bartuna brings, which is speaking really to a student and saying, don't think that you are, you know, the greatest, like an arch judge who knows best better than your teacher. To the contrary, you should humble yourself and try to understand what your teacher's trying to say. Don't think you are the most knowledgeable of all. He goes on to say, "Ukeshiyu bale dinim omdim lefanecha," and while the litigants are standing before you, "you lefanecha," excuse me, "you be'enecha kereshaim," they should be in your eyes like reshaim, like wicked people. Now this really stands in contrast to the two previous mishnayos. Two mishnayos ago, we had the point that you should don a skodam lechavschus. You should assume, you should judge everybody favorably, and if you don't know if they're guilty or innocent, you should assume the best of them. Then the last mission we had said, well, you have to protect yourself and your family. You have to distance yourself from people who seem to be bad and not give them any benefit of the doubt. You have to have, you know, be practical. Here we're taking the other extreme. We're saying when you're functioning as a judge, you have to be totally skeptical, circumspect. You have to assume everyone is in the wrong. And that way, you won't sort of give anyone the benefit of the doubt because they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt. As a judge, you need to, you know, be totally disinterested in who's the winner. You shouldn't have favorites, God forbid. You shouldn't think this guy is a nice guy who I know is usually good, and so on. None of that, of course. Rather, assume both sides are guilty, and therefore you'll ask the probing questions to arrive at the truth that you need to, as you said in the previous part of the Mishnah. However, ukesh niftar milafanecha, but once you've dismissed them, meaning once you as the judge have rendered a decision, finding someone guilty or innocent, or finding in favor of one plaintiff over the defendant, let's say, so then you benecha kezakain. You should see both parties as being meritorious, as being in the right. Meaning, even if you know that the person you found in the wrong, guilty of whatever it is, or liable to pay, did something wrong, okay, we all make mistakes, we all done the wrong thing, but now they are now paying their dues, and that puts them back in the good books. That, of course, assumes, the Mishnah says, kishikiblu aleim esadin. That assumes that they accept the judgment. In other words, they're not fighting and insisting their innocence. They're saying, okay, if that's how it has to be, it has to be. And they now are paying their dues, making whatever compensation is required of them and the like. So then you as the judge, should assume that they believe their side of the story. They were not intentional in their bad behavior. And to whatever extent that isn't true, now that they've accepted and provided that, they do accept your ruling and live up to the consequences, so that now puts them back in your eyes, back to that should be in their good books, as a kind, now they're cleansed. There is a separate approach here, which is sometimes in a court case, you can't force a person to pay because you lack sufficient evidence. Say, for example, you have one witness. So one witness isn't enough to force a person to pay. But one witness could force a person to take a shavua, to swear that he doesn't owe the money or he's innocent of whatever he's accused of. And if he swears, so he's believed in the court, meaning he can't be forced to pay. So according to that eventuality, our Mishnah is saying, if a person swears that he's innocent or not liable, you should believe him. You should assume that's what he believes. Just because there's one witness who says that's not the case, you shouldn't assume the worst of the accused. Rather, if he swears that it's true, you should believe that at least he believes it's true, and you shouldn't walk under the court once he's, you know, gotten away with whatever he got away with, that he actually got away with murder and he did something wrong. No, you should assume the best of him, accept his shvuah, his oath at face value, that he means what he swore and that it was true.